Greenwood, Oklahoma, a suburb of Tulsa, was the type of community that African Americans are still attempting to reclaim and build. It was modern, majestic, sophisticated, and unapologetically black. Tragically, it was also the site of one of the bloodiest and most horrendous race riots that the United States has ever experienced. During the night of May 31, 1921, deputized whites looted and burned 40 square blocks of African-American homes, including hospitals, schools, churches, and businesses. This year marks 94 years since more than 300 African-Americans lost their lives, and more than 9,000 were left homeless. We should not ever forget Greenwood. Now this dramatic history is brought back to us by two brilliant artists, star of stage, screen, and television, award-winning actress and director Linnie Godfrey directs the reading of a new play entitled An American Dream Destroyed, written by award-winning playwright Celeste Bedford Walker. On October the 19th, at 7 to 9:30 p.m., you can be witness to this moving event in history by journeying to ArtsQuest at Steel Stacks. This is WDIY 88.1 Allentown, and you are listening to Lehigh Valley Art Salon. I remain George Miller, and along with my wife and co-host Kate Scuffle, we are simply honored to be speaking with playwright Celeste Bedford Walker and with actress-director Linnie Godfrey. Welcome, Linnie.
Thank you very much.
Welcome, Celeste.
Thank you.
I think we should say from the very beginning, the complete title of it is Greenwood, An American Dream Destroyed, so that we want to really identify the township more than anything else, because since we're informing the country and the world about this incident, this disaster, as the last survivor refers to it, I think we want to really identify the township, which does not really get enough identification. What do you think about that, Celeste?
Oh, I agree. Greenwood.
Yes.
Sometimes the area is referred to as Black Wall Street, which is certainly very appropriate because they were so prosperous, they did have a Black Wall Street. But what we are talking about in this particular play is the entire township of Greenwood, the residents of all different class stratas. So I think it's very appropriate that we emphasize the name of the town, Greenwood.
And, Linnie, Greenwood was in the northern part of Tulsa, in that part. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yes. It's suburb of Tulsa, off of
yes.
Downtown. Am I being accurate, Celeste?
Yes, certainly. Mm-hmm. Yes, it
it's,
is.
It's
what
off,
we would call
off.
A suburb.
Yes, yes. And to get back to even the term Black Wall Street, it was initially called Negro Wall Street.
Absolutely.
By W.B. Du Bois. And I think in the 60s, when we all got black, we called it black.
You know? That's right. You're right.
To be very frank,
we all got black.
To be very frank, you know. But I think the original name, and proudly so, because Negro at that point in time was a name that was an upgrade from colored. Negro Wall Street was what it was referred to. The prosperity of when it took 1, 2, 3 years for $1 to circulate and then get out of that community. Yes.
And Celeste and Lenny, could you tell us a little bit about, for the listener, how the community developed out of also a kind of oil rush, a boom time in Oklahoma and in Tulsa? The city itself was growing by leaps and bounds. Given the tenor of the times and segregation, that meant that growth for the black community, the African-American community, was happening in Greenwood at a pace that seems to actually often outpace the rest of Tulsa.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It was founded by a man named O.W. Gurley, and he owned, he was a journalist, he owned the newspaper. And how the town came about was he bought up some property and decided that all of the property that he was buying, he was only going to sell to Negroes, enterprising Negroes who wanted to own their own homes and set up their own businesses. Mm. And the others who moved in took up that mission. So everyone who moved in and bought a business and started to own some land would rent to other Negroes as they heard about Greenwood and came into the town. And they were all really very prosperous, sharing there with each other. As Lenny said, you know, a dollar in Greenwood stayed in the community 3 years before it went out into other communities, which is certainly not the case today in the black community with the black dollar.
I think
so. They prospered and they grew. Oil, as you said, oil is the commodity that put Tulsa on the map, and it also put Greenwood on the map because many of the services, many of the people who lived in Greenwood did work in Tulsa, and many of the Tulsa companies were fueled by the oil, so the oil just trickled down and around to everybody. So everybody was really doing quite well.
I think it's also important to note that the strip of land that was used and that and became Greenwood was initially unwanted by anybody else, though. It was warehouses, and it was by the railroad track and didn't have a lot of value. And so it was easier for them to obtain that land. And then after they obtained it, these people who were prosperous, who were aggressive, turned that strip of land, which really was nothing, into this prosperous community, one by one by one, until there were hundreds and hundreds of businesses that they were quite proud of, from hospitals all the way to pool rooms to libraries, everything. That was their school systems. It all really is a wonderful vision to think about that there were boom towns in that time, and then there were 56 of them, and this was one, but the most prosperous of them was Greenwood, I believe. So that's...
And we were talking a bit before, too, what leads into, and which is where the play will cross into or intersect with Greenwood, with the events of 1921. There's also a kind of perfect storm building. And you guys can illuminate me more, but World War One vets, returning African-American men who have fought for this country, black communities that have bought liberty bonds, people that are buying into it, who are citizens, who are still coming into a community where there's segregation. They need to live in this neighborhood. They can go into downtown to work, but they need to return to Greenwood. They can't actually work in the oil industry. The Klan is mushrooming, blossoming in ways that Tulsa becomes overrun with Klan activities. So you've got this incredibly prosperous, well-educated, beautifully built community, and it's almost too good to be true. And by 1921, as often has been the case, and there's a woman who claims that a young black man has bothered her in some way.
Well, as one of the characters says, and I believe it's Pritchett, it always starts with the scream of a white woman, mm-hmm. doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Is that right, Celeste?
Yes, that's what he said.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I think what happens, and it happens in the play to replicate history, is that you have men who have been away to war, as did happen in World War II. My father was a World War II vet. And they get this wonderful taste of freedom and equality that is displayed to them in other countries, not within the services, but in other countries, as those people are so grateful for their service. And then they think that they've come back to America and there needs to be more change. So they're still in their war, and we have characters that reflect that. They're still in their war attitude. You have some that are a little bit more passive, but they still believe that there must be a time where they can be treated equally. And along with this attitude, of course, they bump up to the very aggressive white practitioners of white supremacy. And when these two butt heads, then you have a disaster that resulted in the destruction of this town. It is inevitable eventually. There was no policing of Greenwood by black people. It was only there was a white police department in Tulsa that would come and periodically police them. So these men were always very protective of their families. There were always guns that protected the homes. Everyone probably had one. And when this happened, they were very, very, I think, defensive about this young man who was accused of something and wanted to defend him. And then that was called an agitation by the white citizens. And that's why there is still some controversy as to what any reparation can happen to the survivors. You know,
and one of the things that is very striking to me is the relevance of this play today. Of course, we know that, you know, the Chicago race riots happened in 1919, which was a little earlier in Chicago, where 23 blacks were killed, 1,000 were left homeless because of an unofficial segregation of the Chicago white beaches. And this young man was stoned by white youth. And, of course, the Philadelphia riots of 1964, we can all relate to that. But this particular play is crucially about why and how and the people who live there. Is that not right?
That's correct. Celeste, I'll lead and then you can continue. I think what we have done in this reworking of this particular production is that we've created a family so that you can relate to it, so that you have now people, not just an event that's happening, not just a documentation of it. We have the exposition, we hope, is dispersed throughout the script, but you find out what this event did to the actual people that we created. Mm-hmm. Celeste, go.
Absolutely. We decided to build it around the people so that we could actually have a story, and so that the events, modern-day blacks and whites could relate to the event because they would invest in the characters, they would care about the characters, and they would care about the events that were perpetrated upon the characters. And as you were alluding to, it's a very modern story. It still feels very modern because so many of the same conditions that existed in Greenwood at that time still exist in America. We still have this conflict between the black community and the police officers. We still have racism. So the story feels very modern. The battle that this fictitious family feels very true and very modern today.
Right. We are aware that we're going to hear more, but we know now that it was pure envy and a vow to put progressive and high-achieving African-Americans in their place. That was the cause and the demise of Black Mecca, also called, I think, Little Africa or Black Wall Street. Please stay with us. We will be back right after this poignant message.
Hello, this is Renee Montaigne. If WDIY relied on commercials for most of its money, we could try to bring you the same amount of news and all the local programs, Your Financial Choices, The Blend, WDIY Classics, but this probably would not happen. The business model for public radio is listener support. Listener support means that this is radio about you, for you, and by you. NPR and WDIY rely on listeners to make this station possible. We're relying on you to make a contribution right now, not tomorrow, right now. So please call 610-758-8810 or give online at WDIY.org. That's WDIY.org. And thank you.
This is Lehigh Valley Arts Salon, George Miller and Kate Scuffle. And our guest, we are chatting with Lynnie Godfrey, actress, director, and a wonderful person all around to give us some information on what we need to know, and with Celeste Bedford Walker, who is the playwright of Greenwood, An American Dream Destroyed.
We were talking a little bit during the break. Celeste and Lynnie clearly delight in working together, and that can be, you know, I imagine playwriting, of all the things in the theater, can be the loneliest or the least communal activity, and it must be a joy to be able to work together. Can you ladies tell us a little bit about the process and what brought you together on this project and what it's been like?
Well, I'll just say, and I'll let Lenny explain the program that she has and the mission that she has, but as a playwright, you're right, it is a lonely business, and I have just been so delighted to work with somebody as gifted as Lenny. She has really inspired me with Greenwood and really made great contributions toward this script, I must say. We've laughed, we've talked about everything in the process of creating this play. It's kind of like, you know, the characters in Greenwood. We put the fictional characters in there so that the event will flow. Well, the work is flowing because of the personal relationship that we are developing. And it's actually being infused into the work. We'll talk about something and come up with an idea, and then the next thing you know, it's in the play. Lenny will come up with something, and then the next thing you know, it'll be in the play. She said, "Oh, Celeste, you put that in the play." I said, "Oh, yeah, that was so good what you said. I got to put it in there." So she's a director. She's an actress. She's a singer, a performer. So she's bringing all that to bear in helping me craft this play, and I have just really enjoyed the journey and process, because it's a journey writing a play, as you know, layering the play, and she has just been just immeasurable in her help and the joy that she has brought me in writing this.
And the whole theatrical process too, Celeste, I think is very important for our listeners to know about. You don't just write a play and it goes to Broadway. There's constant hard work, not only between the actors, but certainly between the director and the playwright and the interpretation and the whole focus of the theatrical event itself. And not many people realize that.
They don't. And when you said hard work, that is the key word. That is Lenny's motto. Just do the work. And the work will stand on its own. Just do the work. And that's what she and I have been doing. We have been doing the work. We've been working hard, and I'm proud.
Well, you know, I'm proud to work with such a gifted artist, such a dedicated artist. It's reciprocal that I think that we feel a kinship with one another, not only because of this play, but because of our passion for what we do as for a living. The mission that I have is to take plays that would no longer be considered for mainstream. They might be a little difficult, maybe unpopular, and to give them a focus and to work really hard to get them into the attention of the audiences. I think the audience is the life of the theater. I don't think that we put too much emphasis on the opinion of one person or another person, and we don't give the audience enough credit for being intelligent enough to come and see exactly what they want to see. It might be indigestion or somebody would have stepped on somebody's foot that night. And, you know, you get something written that is not as pleasurable as you'd like, and then a lot of people will turn away. Well, my mission is to change that and to have us think for ourselves. You know, I think that we use those things as a guide, but not as the reference point as to whether or not it's something for us. So I am finding plays like this play that was a play that was reworked. It was a play that Celeste had written a while ago. How many years ago, Celeste?
It's been about 4 or 5 years ago, okay. And it's current.
Then she'd put it up, and then a friend of hers, Michael Green, I'll say who it was, because he's responsible for wanting me to do a character in this and presenting it to me. And when I read it, I thought, well, this is a wonderful play, but I think it has some place to go. And eventually calling Celeste up, that's what I did, and said, Celeste, I think this is fabulous. You know, can we discuss this more? And we started a conversation of it after there was a production, which I was not involved in, but after the production was over, I called her up, and we've been talking and working ever since.
And what's exciting too is, Lenny, you work with Arts Quest, and
yes.
Your relationship with Arts Quest is allowing
yes.
you to have a home and a showcase, and as you said, a place to work, to fail,
to
be brave,
and
develop this work.
Yes.
You just finished work. There's been a process for the unentitled Charles White's play. And this piece will be going to La Mama the day after the reading at
yes,
Arts Quest?
Yes, it plays here October 19th on Monday at 7 p.m. At Arts Quest there. I know everyone says 7:30, but it's 7 p.m. We need the time at Arts Quest. And the next day, we travel to New York, and we are going to be doing the same reading at La Mama in New York City down in the Village, in which I'm very privileged to bring her her work there at this state. So like Unentitled, which did do a reading in New York City at the Susan Batson Studio about a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, to standing room only. We, the fire department probably was going to throw us out of there. But we what we want to do is find places for these plays, not to just do readings, but to be showcased, to be to make sure that they get seen by the general audience. That's the most important thing. And that's the mission of what I'm trying to do. And I'm finding such wonderful pieces that highlight, I think, images that we're not used to seeing, but really want to see. I think that there's an audience for these kinds of pieces. The next piece that I do, which is Lois's Wedding, is a wonderful piece. And it showcases a different kind of characterization in a fictitious family and how the oil industry is affecting our community. So they're not pieces that are just African-American. They're pieces that are different, that may not really get the attention of the Nederlanders or the Schuberts, but gets the attention of the audiences. Mm-hmm. And that's what we want. And so, of course, these people are going to probably pop me in the head talking about them like this. But I don't think, I'm not knocking them. I'm just saying that there's room for all of us. And there needs to be room for all of us. The audiences should go to everyone's theater. The theater belongs to everyone.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It's exciting because this really makes the project a real arts incubator, a phrase that gets tossed around a lot, but this is making it really happen.
Yes.
Now, the Lois's Wedding will be in March, and that will also be read at Arts Quest.
It's Arts Quest, yes.
And if we want to find out more about any of the plays in the series, including Greenwood and American Dream Destroyed, you would go to the Arts Quest website.
Yes. Right? And the dates are very important. Yeah. I believe Lois's Wedding, which is by Bathsheba Monk, mm-hmm. and which I want to tell you that my two hosts are going to be involved.
Yes.
Oh, got a little plug in there.
Yes, that's right. Who are absolutely wonderful, by the way. That's going to be in March, and I believe mm-hmm. it's March 23rd.
March 21st, actually, on a Monday as well.
Yes, March 21st. And then October 19th is what you go to Arts Quest and look for Greenwood, An American Dream Destroyed. And then you can get all of your information. I believe the ticket is $10, and you get a free glass of wine.
That's
it's wonderful. We have cabaret seating, and then we have regular orchestra seating. And I think when we did it for Unentitled, everyone enjoyed the whole being able to either enjoy it like it was, like they were a comfy at home or in the theater. So, you know, come and enjoy. Come and enjoy.
It's really a unique opportunity also to be in at the beginning or kind of to see something as it's birthing.
Yes.
And I think that's really exciting.
It's embryonic. You know, yeah. I always think of it as the conception of a play is right there at the very, very beginning when I was in college and learned from all of my teachers how this process starts, because talent, which is what I was considered for so many years, comes in. We're at the end. We're the last people considered, you know. So when you're at the very beginning and you learn all how the creative team is formed and the light person and the sound person and the props person and the setting and, you know, all of that's wonderful. And everybody's on the same page. It's a wonderful process.
And the artists you're working with the readings, these aren't just, these are from?
Oh, New York City. We are using five of the artists that were here for Unentitled.
Okay.
Two of them are not going to be available. And then we are enhancing that with probably about five, six more. So there are going to be 11 people on stage.
Excellent.
Yes.
Excellent.
Yes. And I have to say, yes, I am going to be in this one this time.
I forgot to point that out. Yes.
Absolutely.
So someone asked me, they said, are you going to do a Barbara Streisand? You know, you're going to direct and be in? And I said, well, I'm going to try.
Celeste, we would certainly welcome you here in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, she's coming.
Oh, yeah.
Celeste will be here.
That's what
Celeste
I
will be, yes, she will
be
here.
I can't wait. I'm so looking forward to it, meeting all of the wonderful people.
And will you be traveling into New York, I'm assuming, too, as well the next day? Sure.
Absolutely,
it'll
yes.
be so exciting.
Right. Yes, yes.
We'll be there for the whole event. Can't
yes,
wait.
Yes, yes. It's just been a wonderful time formulating all of this and getting the feedback from people, the excitement from those people who have seen it in its first form. Mm-hmm. And then now they can't wait to see, well, what did you do mm-hmm. to it? Mm-hmm. I don't know. You know, I don't know. I may not be feeling this. I said, well, just feel and come on to the stage. You know, come on to the theater. Don't worry about feeling, you know.
It's got to be a little bit daunting because it's not a documentary film. Theater isn't. And that's not how you tell a theater story. You've got to make it intimate.
Exactly. You really have to create, I believe, and that's what Celeste and I thought we were doing, is creating people that people would care about, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. you know, and at the same time watching what the event has done to them, mm-hmm. watching the destruction of a family as mm-hmm. well as the destruction of a township.
I'd strongly suggest, I mean, we're wrapping up here soon, but as well as the piece, I hope that what it stimulates is if one has a chance to Google to read more about the Greenwood experience, there's more than we could even touch on today and the aftermath. It's fascinating and kind of frightening that it is so little known.
It is our mission to have it internationally known. So London, here we come.
So much of Black history is like that, you know. Yeah. It's unknown. There are a million and one stories out there for us to tell, and we will be telling them.
And yes. Celeste, I know that your work has often dealt with sharing those stories and bringing those stories back to the stage. So it makes sense. It's kind of a wonderful culmination that you two would arrive at this moment with Greenwood.
Greenwood, An American Dream Destroyed. 7 o'clock, October the 19th at ArtsQuest, Steel Stacks, the Blast Furnace Room. Thank you very much, Celeste, for being with us. And Lenny, we love you, and we thank
you.
We know that you'll be back with us again. In fact, your husband Carl is here saying, say hello. Say hello to Mom. Carl, I just did. Special thanks to our technical engineer and operations director, Neil Heaver, for his professional expertise and for dedication to our mission here at Lehigh Valley Arts Salon in Lehigh Valley Cultural and Entertainment Dialogue.